Welcome to the New Witches. It is witchy after Wednesday.
Yes, that's my fault. If anyone, no, but it kind of is. I actually was thinking about it. You remember when we were recording the listener stories and I was like just having a hard time with words?
Yeah.
I feel like that has definitely become a good indication of like a migraine is coming.
Ah.
Because, like, okay. It's always there, but sometimes it gets a little bit worse. And I was thinking about it, like, as I had the migraine, I'm like, where the fuck is this coming from? And Graham was like, weren't you having, like, talking issues just the other day? Okay. Like, yes, I was. But, yeah, that's on me and my brain.
Well, you know, we are big proponents or we're big advocates of self-care, taking care of yourself when you need it. So I'm glad you got the day off that you needed.
Yeah, that was, and I was so scared to message my boss and be like, I'm not coming back from lunch. I can't. I'm sorry. We had like multiple people out. So I was like, it was the last thing I wanted to do. But when you have to do it, you have to do it. And
yeah,
I don't know if anyone else gets migraines like this, but I lose vision. And
those are intense.
Yeah, it can get, I mean, the first time is always the scariest because you're like, oh, what's happening? But
right.
Yeah, it's opening your eyes just isn't fun.
I've never had it that bad where I can't see. Mm-hmm. I've never had my vision impaired, but I have had a migraine where it felt like my head was going to explode.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's the worst. And
it's so prolonged. It goes on for so long.
It does. And when I was younger, the nausea was much stronger than it is now. I used to get every possible side effect that you can have with a migraine. I used to get, as I've reached 30, it's changed. I wouldn't say it's better, but the one part that has improved a little bit is I would have that pain, but then be so nauseous and like throwing up with that pain is like,
ugh.
Like,
you already get a headache after you throw up, let alone when you start off already having a headache.
Yes, it's like there's this, no, it's not horrible. Fun. It's not fun. Migraines suck.
They do. Mm. They really do. I mean, I don't get them often, but I've definitely had them. Gavin used to get them, too, when he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much anymore, but yeah. Well, there's a tea for that. I'm just trying to do some sort of segue into our topic. Just like drink some white willow bark tea. Like, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Get over it. Drink your tea.
Well, if you haven't gathered, we are going to be discussing herbology and herbalism today.
We are, because, you know, we've talked about, you know, you're a green witch. I use plants as part of my practice. I think the witchy world is so hooked on herbalism that there's a whole nother word that we can all be using that actually absolutely applies and is almost more witchy feeling in a way. If you're a fan of Harry Potter.
I was going to say, like, it's like the herbology class.
Right. They didn't take herbalism. Mm-hmm. They took herbology. And so, just to kind of, like, make the distinction, herbology is, it's the study of herbs and their medical or medicinal properties, especially when combined. So not purely medicinal. But it's also the study of collecting of herbs, especially as a hobby. So if you're someone who you're really into plants, maybe you use like plant magic, but you're not heavy on the medicinal use, but more just the study of them for fun. Mm-hmm. Herbology is, I mean, use whatever word you fucking feel like, but like
there's also botany is another one that's thrown around.
Exactly. That's, you know, the science of plants. But herbalism mm-hmm. is specifically herbal medicine, yeah. or the study yeah. of the use of medicinal herbs, and also the business of growing, collecting, and distributing herbal products. So there is a decent distinction between the two. I actually feel like even though I do use plants for medicinal purposes, it's not all I use it for. And I personally feel comfortable with herbology over herbalism.
Mm-hmm.
For myself. Like I said, y'all use I feel like whatever you want.
Even if you don't necessarily... Even if you're not necessarily familiar with the medicinal properties, you don't use it so much for medicine, but you do use it in your witchcraft.
Yeah.
In, you know, studying the meanings of different herbs. I feel like that also falls under herbology because mm-hmm. you're still studying yeah. herbs.
Exactly.
You're still like gathering that information about them. So that's another aspect because I know some people are a little intimidated by learning all the medicinal properties, and you don't have to know those to use it in witchcraft. Like there are, you know, you can just use herbs like simply for, you know, if you're using it in a spell jar, this and that. Like obviously if you're going to be like ingesting it or smoking it, you want to make sure you're doing it safely, but you can also just simply use it just for that, for like it's symbolism, its meaning, its magical properties.
Exactly. And that would be what herbology would encompass, since herbalism mm-hmm. really is just focused on the medicinal side of it. And even if you yeah. use, if you do both, if you are aware of medicinal properties and maybe you are, you know, like, ugh, I'm so gassy, and you go to your cupboard for something, you know, plant-wise that's medicinal, even if that's not like all you do with it, you could still be more of an herbologist versus an herbalist.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
That is a good distinction. That is why we are using both terms, because again, we also, you know, labels are labels, pick and choose what you like, but these are just two suggestions for what we'll cover today. And we also felt like this was a good topic because we have covered the Green Witch. We've covered, you know, I mean, obviously, quite a few topics at this point, but we haven't really touched fully on how to use plants.
Absolutely. So before we get into how to use plants, I'm going to go over some history. So the use of plants as medicines predates written human history. I mean, I feel like just herbology and herbalism is as old as time.
Yeah.
Archaeological evidence indicates that humans were using medicinal plants during the Paleolithic period, which was approximately, get this, like my little brain can't wrap my mind around this much time, but that was 60,000 years ago.
That
60,000 years ago, which I know in the scheme of everything that this planet has been through is a blip.
Right.
Which is even crazier. Still, for me and my human lifespan, that is insane.
It truly is. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, it's yeah, crazy, crazy, crazy. Yeah. Mind-blowing. So plant samples gathered from prehistoric burial sites have been thought to support the claim that Paleolithic people had knowledge of herbal medicine. Or at least, you know, that they're kind of intuitively trying their hat at seeing what herbs had what effects on them.
Totally. Monkey see, monkey do, right? Like, mm-hmm. that person yeah. ate that plant and died, so we don't touch it. That person yeah. ate that plant and got a lot of energy. Okay, cool.
I was going to say, like, he ate a bunch of these beans from this tree and he was off the walls.
Right. It makes me also wonder about the people who, like, have figured out mushrooms. Like, what mushroom, like, which ones are dangerous and which ones aren't. Which ones make you trip, you know?
That is a lot of, I'm sorry to say, that's just, like, a lot of sick and or dead humans as trial and error. Like,
right.
If you think of how much we know about mushrooms, like mycology, yes. Like mycologists that they know, they can identify this and that. Like, mushrooms are so tricky, y'all. Yeah. And the fact that we know this, just think of all of the trial and error that unfortunately had to happen for us to be at where we are at.
Exactly. And even with today's knowledge, I like the idea of learning about mushrooms, but I don't trust myself to remember enough to actually go mushroom picking and be like, yes, I can eat these. Good chance I'm going to die.
Yeah. Cut to Michael Scott being like taken down by Dwight so he doesn't eat that mushroom. And he was trying to survive out in the Pennsylvania wilderness. That would be me.
Yep.
I'd be like very proud of my pants that I fashioned into a hat. Okay, so right, back to the Paleolithic peeps. So a 60,000-year-old Neanderthal burial site, which is dubbed Shenidar 4, and this actually is in northern, what is now northern Iraq. It has yielded large amounts of pollen from 8 plant species, 7 of which are now used as herbal remedies.
Oh, so that kind of like would make sense then that that's probably what they're used for.
Yeah, like we thought we invented like putting pollen on things as if we're fancy. People were doing that a while ago. Hi, can I have the lavender ice cream with the pollen topping, please? So in Mesopotamia, the written study of herbs dates back over 5,000 years. So an even smaller blip of time that we've actually been writing and recording our knowledge about herbs. And it dates back to the Sumerians, who created clay tablets with lists of hundreds of medicinal plants, including myrrh and opium, among others.
Okay, I have a funny opium story.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't directly involve me. One of the high schools I went to was in downtown Santa Rosa, was in a house, and across the street was another house where a bunch of monks lived. And nice guys, very nice guys, kept to themselves, were raided a number of times by the FBI for growing opium.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, yeah, they were so cooperative every time. I mean, I was there once when it was happening across the street, because they had like gave us a warning and everything, and we all were like, they're monks. If anyone's dangerous, it's you guys. We're not concerned. They're not selling us kids opium. Like, it's part of their what they do. But yeah, so I got to watch a monk's home be raided by the FBI over opium. That's my story. That's it.
All right, jumping to a different group of ancient peeps, the ancient Egyptians. They also had texts that mentioned use of plants as medicine, though there's actually a bit of controversy because we're still learning the language and the translation of ancient Egyptian.
Right.
Still, now. We're still trying to suss it out. No one can say with 100% confidence that their understanding of the text is the correct translation, as most translations are just approximations between Egyptian and modern ideas.
So that's, I mean, I know that's kind of that way with Sumerian. It's like an educated guess. But like, yeah. We know more than some more ancient languages, but like still not all the way there.
Yeah. It's still uploading. So while physical documents are rare, texts such as Papyrus Ebers, it serves to illuminate and relieve some of the conjecture surrounding ancient herbal practices. So the papyrus consists of lists of ailments and their treatments, and ranges from disease of the limbs. What is that? I don't know. Or diseases anything of the on skin. Your arm. Like disease of limbs. Oh my God, he has limbs. And then there's, of course, disease of the skin. And it has information on over 850 plant medicines, including garlic, juniper, cannabis, castor bean, aloe, and mandrake. Treatments were mainly aimed at eliminating, like, or ridding the patient of the most prevalent symptoms, because the symptoms were largely regarded as the disease itself. So really it was kind of like putting a bandage over it, or as we like to call it, Kaiser. The preventative medicine, my ass. So knowledge of the collection and preparation of such remedies are mostly unknown, as many of the texts available for translation assume the physician already has some knowledge of how treatments are conducted, and therefore such techniques would not need restating. So it wasn't like a beginner's manual. It was like just like prompts, really, for someone who already knew their shiz.
Right.
Now in India, Ayurveda medicine has used many herbs such as turmeric, possibly as early as 4000 BC or BCE. Earliest Sanskrit writings such as the Rig Veda and Atharva Veda are some of the earliest available documents detailing the medical knowledge that formed the basis of the Ayurveda system.
Which we still totally use today.
Which is just cool. Mm-hmm. The Ayurvedic system is so interesting. We won't get into it right now because I'm still just going through the history. This is honestly like just when I was taking my herbalism course, this was like where we started. Was just like herbalism throughout the ages and throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And the Ayurveda system is still very much used today. Like people in India, there's still physicians out there that they use this doctrine to, not doctrine, that's not the right word, but these methods.
Right.
Now jump over to the other side of Asia. Let's go to China. In China, seeds likely used for herbalism have been found in the archaeological sites of Bronze Age China, dating from the Shang Dynasty, which was around 1766 to 1122 BCE. And the mythological Chinese emperor Shennong is said to have written the first Chinese pharmacy and encyclopedia together, what that word is. And it was called the Shennong Benkao Jing. So the Shennong Benkao Jing lists 365 medicinal plants and their uses, including ephedra, the shrub that introduced the drug ephedrine to modern medicine.
Ephedrine.
Hemp is one as well that's listed. Chalmugra, which is one of the first effective treatments for leprosy. Succeeding generations augmented on the Shennong Benkao Jing, as in the Yao Jing Lung, which basically means the treatise on the nature of medicinal herbs. It was a 7th century Tang Dynasty. Is it treatise or is it treatise? Treatise, right? Yeah. Treatise on herbal medicine. So the Hippocratic corpus serves as a collection of texts that are associated with the father of Western medicine, Hippocrates of Cos. The recipes and remedies included in parts of the corpus indicate popular and prevalent treatments of the early ancient Greek period. Though any of the herbals included in the corpus are similar to those practiced in the religious sectors of healing, they differ a lot in the lack of rites, prayers, chants used in the application of the remedies. Mm-hmm. Galen of Pergamon, a Greek physician practicing in Rome, was certainly prolific in his attempt to write down his knowledge on all things medical. And in his pursuit, he wrote many texts regarding herbs and their properties, most notably his Works of Therapeutics. So in this text, Galen outlines the merging of each discipline within medicine that could combine to restore health and prevent disease. While there are certainly texts from the medieval period that denote the uses of herbs, there has been a longstanding debate between scholars as to the actual motivations and understandings that underline the creation of herbal documents during the medieval period. Mm-hmm. So the 16th and 17th centuries were pretty much the great age of herbals, many of them available for the first time in English and other languages rather than Latin or Greek.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The 18th and 19th centuries saw more incorporation of plants found in the Americas, but also the advance of modern medicine. Mm-hmm. The first herbal to be published in English was the anonymous Greet Herbal of 1526. The two best known herbals in English were the Herbal or General History of Plants, which was published in 1597 by John Gerard, and the English Physician Enlarged. Sorry, I'm just, my brain just goes into like an English doctor and someone just like pinching Zoom on them.
Oh, that's not where my mind went.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm just thinking of like literally just like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Okay, so The English Physician Enlarged was published in 1653 by Nicholas Culpepper. So in the Americas, herbals were relied upon for most medical knowledge, with physicians being few and far between. These books included almanacs, such as Doden's New Herbal, Edinburgh New Dispensary, Buchan's Domestic Medicine, and some other works. So aside from European knowledge on American plants, indigenous Americans shared some of their knowledge with colonists, because like, why wouldn't we learn from the people who've been here for thousands of years? I don't know. But most of these records were not written and compiled until the 19th century, which is quite late. Like,
yeah. And
our written texts, our herbals on indigenous American plants, like it might as well just been written yesterday,
right?
as far as like the history of herbalism and herbology in general.
Yeah.
John Bartram was a botanist that studied the remedies that indigenous Americans would share and often included bits of knowledge of these plants in his printed almanacs. So the forming of pharmacology in the 19th century led to a broader understanding of specific actions that drugs have on the body. So traditional herbalism has been regarded as a method of alternative medicine in the U.S. since the Flexner Report of 1910. That led to the closing of eclectic medical schools where botanical medicine was exclusively practiced. So
that was a thing. I think people didn't realize that was a thing here.
It was really just, this is the time. That's when modern medicine was kind of just like,
yep,
drugs, pharmacy, 1910. That's when it was rolled out. In China, Mao Zedong reintroduced traditional Chinese medicine, which relied heavily on herbalism, into the healthcare system in 1949. It's very much about, you know, getting the Chinese people back to their roots. Mm-hmm. Get it? Roots. Since then, schools have been training thousands of practitioners, including Americans, in the basics of Chinese medicines to be used in hospitals. While Britain in the 1930s was experiencing turbulence over the practice of herbalism, in the U.S., government regulation began to prohibit the practice. So as we've entered the 21st century, more doctors are more willing to entertain or even embrace the use of plant medicine where it can help. There are, there's a certain kind of like doctors title that you can get where It's basically, it's a more holistic kind of doctor.
It's a naturopath.
A naturopath, thank you. Mm-hmm. So I actually went to a doctor like this before. So they have kind of like all of the medical knowledge of modern medicine, as we'll call it. But they also bring into account and can and will even prescribe certain supplements that are derived from herbs or simply are like herbs.
So I will say there's kind of an asterisk on the title itself because I went through a deep dive. This girl I went to high school with, very like compulsive liar. I came across her recently. She said she was becoming one of these doctors. And I was like, you didn't go to college. How are you becoming that? There are people who study medicine and study that path and end up with, you know, like a PhD and become a doctor. But mm-hmm. there is another way to get that title where you don't actually go to medical school. So if you were looking for one, just double check that they have that because that's a thing, apparently.
Yes, make sure that there's an MD somewhere in their title.
Yeah. So, okay, we just went over plant medical history, but how does this play into witchcraft?
Yeah, how do we get witchy with it, Laura?
I want to know. I know. So this is to suppose that plants weren't just used purely for medicine in the past, but for spells and, you know, other uses. Mythology from around the world has all kinds of stories of different deities, usually women, not always, pairing them with magic and some sort of plant use. Like, I'm just blanking. Hecate, however you want to pronounce her name. Often she taught magic, but she also used plants for healing. So that's just one example of a pairing. So as pre-Christian people passed on these stories from their mythologies, they also passed on stories or superstitions related to the plants. The magical part or herb of immortality sought by Gilgamesh, the hero of ancient Mesopotamian mythology, provides one example of how myths use plants as symbols of life and of the healing power of nature. So that's an example of a story that would have been passed on as this is our mythology. But then a certain plant may be known for this gives you strength. Maybe the story gets lost, maybe it gets remembered. But I think it's a good example. But because some plants yield poisons and some die in winter, plants can also represent death and decay. So not even from mythology, but just a simple part of life where they kind of pick up this idea of what it's for. Various trees, shrubs, herbs, grains, flowers, and fruit appear in myths and legends as general symbols of rebirth, decay, immortality. There's fucking for everything. Fertility. It's littered in there. I mean,
yeah.
You know, people nowadays use the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. The Norse gods ate apples to keep their youth. Very watered down. But again, another example.
Yeah.
So here's
and if the doctor is cute, screw the fruit.
The doctor, I got a peach you need to look at. Put your seat. Never mind.
oh my god, Laura. Physician enlarged indeed.
That's what I was just thinking. Like, what did they take that probably, like, anyway, the title. Here are some plants and just like little stories connected with them. So, bamboo, the jointed cane like bamboo plant, plays a role in Asian folklore. Because bamboo is sturdy and always green, the Chinese regard it as a symbol of long life. In the creation story of the Andaman Islanders of the Indian Ocean, the first man is born inside a large stalk of bamboo. And Philippine Islanders traditionally believe that bamboo crosses in their field would bring good crops. So again, kind of this like different regions all centered around the same plant kind of brings good folklore that just kind of comes right down to sturdy.
Yeah.
Now, another one is clover. So the Druids or pagans of the British Isles regarded clover as sacred with both good and evil meanings. According to the legend, however, and this is very timely, St. Patrick later converted the pagan Irish to Christianity by using the three-part clover leaf as an example of the Trinity, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in one. Spoiler alert, there were no snakes. They were people.
Yeah.
We ridded Ireland of pagans. So
mm-hmm.
every year, I can't not say that. So, clover came to represent fertility and prosperity in English folklore, and dreaming of clover foretold a happy marriage. I don't know how we got to marriage from the Holy Trinity.
That's a leap.
It's a leap over the ocean from Ireland to Great Britain.
But it's just like that line in the song At Last. My heart was wrapped up in clover the night I looked at you.
Okay, that would make sense. Actually, give me one moment. My computer just decided to let me know that I never plugged it in. And it's dying. I didn't plug my computer in, so it's dying. Here's an apple. There you go. Just kidding. It's some it's apple juice. Okay. Anyway. So, okay. Somehow that makes sense for clover. I don't know. But it is what it is. So then we go to...
It just got associated with, like, loves in some way. I guess if you're talking fertility, like...
But again, I don't know how... I mean, that area, I guess fertility, maybe that comes from just, like, how much it rains there and how much clover. Mm. There's just an abundance of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. But then we got ginseng. I can never say this word right.
Ginseng?
Is it gin... voice, or I've heard ginseng.
I've heard ginseng, but I wouldn't be surprised if the proper pronunciation is actually like ginseng.
Well,
but I can't be sure. Marketing exactly. has sold it as ginseng.
Marketing also calls mucinex when it's for your mucus. So I don't trust marketing all the time.
Mucinex.
It is mucinex. Anyway, the ginseng root has long been prized in Asia for its medicinal properties. It was also thought to provide strength and sexual energy.
It does give you energy, like it for does. Real, though.
Yeah.
It's a great caffeine-free alternative to an energizing supplement.
Absolutely. Now, a Korean legend says that a poor boy caring for his dying father prayed to the mountain spirit, who appeared to him in a dream and showed him where to find ginseng and tried to sell it at a high price. When when his greed led to his arrest, he ate the root, which made him so strong that he overpowered the guards and escaped.
So, good for him.
Very good. Very good. I get that. her little head, like her neck, I should say, just stretched like twice the length. Now, the next one is laurel. The evergreen laurel tree or shrub occurs in many varieties, including cinnamon and sassafras.
Sassafras.
Greek mythology says that Daphne, a nymph who rejected the love of Apollo, was turned into a laurel tree, which Daphne is the equivalent of Laura, Greek versus Latin. Just in case anyone didn't know, I knew it because I named my dog Daphne, and then I felt really conceited once I found that out. So she got turned into a laurel tree. The laurel was sacred to Apollo, whose priestesses were said to chew its leaves in order to become oracles. The Greeks also crowned some of their champions with laurel wreaths, and according to English mythology, if two lovers take a laurel stick, break it in half, and keep the pieces, they will always remain faithful to each other, and the name Laura means crowned with laurel. Not in my notes.
That is a cool meaning.
I used to not really understand it, and I thought, well, dumb, I don't have, like, warrior or anything like that, but I'm good with this now.
I mean, I have bitter, or drop of the sea. The drop of the sea is the most romantic notion I get from my name. But you know what's bitter? Seawater. So honestly, like, it's so funny because when I would ask, when we used to have an Alexa, we don't anymore. Mm-hmm. But I would be like, Alexa, what does Gavin mean? And it would be like, White Hawk or Little Hawk. And then he'll be like, hey, Alexa, what does Maria mean? Bitter, like the sea, or bitter. It was just, it kept repeating bitter. And I'm like, okay, I got it, you bitch.
Oh, y'all, look up your name meanings before you name a kid, just so that Alexa says something nice.
Yeah.
Or give it a new meaning.
I like the name Maria. I highly recommend the name Maria. It is a pretty name.
Maybe we can add a meaning to it.
Well, I like the drop of the sea because, I mean, I love the ocean. And it makes sense because mar in Spanish is sea. And so a Maria, that would make sense. That's like something of the sea.
Okay. But why bitter?
Because salt water is bitter.
Bit salty.
But isn't it interesting how I've seen it repeated so many different places where people describe it not as salty, but as bitter. Maybe it's like certain seas had a lot of minerality that made it bitter.
That would make sense.
I mean, I know salt is a mineral in and of itself, but had other minerals.
Yeah. Or like different salt content.
Yes.
Yeah, that would make sense. Okay. My next one here that I have is, I don't know how to pronounce it, manioc. It's a flour made from the manioc or manioc root. And it's a traditional staple food of the Amazon people of South America. A story about Manny, an old, much-loved village leader, explains the origin of this. So before dying, Manny promised to come back to take care of his people, and he told them to dig in their ground a year after his death. What they found when they did this was the manioc or manioc root, which Manny's body had turned into food. He literally became food. And thus, a traditional staple of their diets.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, the next is parsley. So the Greeks believed that the herb parsley grew from the blood of a hero named Acamorus, who was killed by a serpent. At games held in his honor, they crowned the winners with parsley wreaths. Both the Greeks and the Romans regarded parsley as a symbol of death and rebirth, which I feel like kind of goes with that, like, he was killed by a serpent, and I feel like serpents usually are that symbol of, like, rebirth.
Yeah.
And they often put parsley on tombs, and someone in need of parsley was someone who was on the verge of death. Which,
there's a lot of Italian dishes on the verge of death then.
I love parsley. I actually just the other day was like, we need to grow parsley this year.
Well, you know what's so funny? I had a volleyball teammate in club volleyball that she loved eating parsley like a rabbit, like just fresh parsley. Like she would just munch on it like she was eating a carrot.
I mean, it is good.
I mean, I like parsley, but I don't like it that much to munch on it. But she was like addicted to it. Whenever we were at a tournament, her mom bought her bags and bags of like the bunches of parsley from like the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And she literally would just munch on that.
I mean, it's
like a rabbit.
It's very high in nutrients and I think vitamin K.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not surprised. It's good for you. It is good for you, I guess, if it's your thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. But it was just definitely like an interesting quirk of hers.
She was on the verge of death.
Vitamin K poisoning.
Now the next one is thistle. So a Scottish legend tells how the thistle, a plant with purple blooms and prickly stems and leaves, became a national emblem. So around 950, this is AD, Norse raiders invaded Scotland. As they crept toward a Scottish camp after dark, one of them stepped on a thistle. Fucking hurts, by the way. The resulting cry of pain. They're so spiky. The resulting cry of pain awoke the Scots, who drove the invaders away and saved Scotland. And there's other meanings with thistle, but that's kind of a persisting one. So, wait a second.
Hmm.
I'm smelling.
Do I have to sneeze?
No. I'm smelling something.
Oh. Is it thistle?
No.
Is it parsley? Like
chocolate and marshmallow.
Ooh, yummy.
And like caramel.
So I'm making s'mores.
Not so much s'mores, but more. Have you ever had Scotch Mallows from See's Candies?
Oh my god, yes.
That's what it smells like.
Yummy.
I don't know why I'm smelling that. Maybe my mom just bought some for Easter.
Oh, that'd be fun.
It's Graham's favorite.
Those are my favorite from C's. Those are my favorites.
We got a big box of it for Valentine's Day from my mom. And she's like, aww, this is for you guys to share. And then I opened it thinking like, she's going to pick something that's like both of our favorites. No, just his favorite.
Nice.
True, my favorite. I like the molasses chips. Those are my absolute favorite. That and the...
It's been a while since I've been to See's Candy.
Oh, God. I love See's
Candy. I love their lollipops. Their vanilla bean lollipop is amazing.
Oh, she did get us some of those, the cinnamon ones. But again, another Graham favorite.
Oh, my God. I hate cinnamon. Not like in everything, but just like candied cinnamon. Like in hot tamales.
Oh, that's
or in gum.
Favorite candy.
No,
like,
I hate it. Candy, I hate candy? It. I can't do it.
I will eat all the hot. I literally just the other day bought a box of hot. I have to have hot tamales on hand. Just like a small handful. I love them so much.
Can't do it. But all the power to you.
Okay. So, okay. Once again, I've talked about how plants connect with mythology, like little tidbits, but how did it blend into our now modern world, and more importantly, the witchy world. So, I can't say this is full credit, but main credit goes to our man, William Shakespeare. So, in Act 4, Scene 1 of Macbeth, one of the witches says, "Fillet a fenny snake in the cauldron boil and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm sting, lizard's leg and owlet's wing. For a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble." So that kind of became the big main witchy potion verbiage that people came to know was thanks to Shakespeare. Yeah.
Yes.
So throughout history, commonly used plants and herbs have been given different names based on what the plants are known for. So common dandelion has been called bitterwort, because it's strong, it has a bitter taste. Blowball and puffball because of its seeding habits. And lion's tooth for its deeply serrated foliage. And piss in the bed because of its diuretic properties.
Oh, yeah.
I've never called it that, but... depending on where you live, you may also call Glaucoma heterosea, Creeping Charlie. Or ground ivy, as I've always known it as. It's also gone by Gill Over the Ground, Runaway Robin, and Lizzie Run Up the Hedge because of its aggressive runners. And also Cat's Foot for the shape of its leaves, and Ale Hoof because it was commonly used in the making of beer and ale.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And also it was called Field Balm because it's been used as a general, like, heal-all herb for balm salves and teas for, like, thousands of years. Nowadays, each plant can have dozens of names. Common and folk names change by region and culture. And even, I think a lot of people know, botanical Latin names.
Mm-hmm.
Yet for thousands of years, people have been handed down plant folklore, herbal remedies, and growing tips that are still used today. We have access now to countless field guides, plant almanacs, internet databases, social media groups, and even plant identification apps to help us identify, grow, and use plants. So, Magda Shakespeare, in his time, herbal names, remedies, and tips were rarely written down. This is kind of that medieval period you kind of talked about earlier, where when things were written down, you weren't really sure what the intention was.
Right. But in his case, drama.
Exactly. A play I wasn't even supposed to say its name. But back in those days, they were usually passed down through families, from herbalists to their students. supposedly. We don't have concrete proof, but that's the idea. And it's said that among some groups or families, the herbal names that were used were deeply guarded secrets. And this gets to a part where I think a lot of people hear that witches had special terms that they used for plants for a number of reasons. They didn't want other people to know what they were using. It was, again, a deeply guarded secret. I have heard mentioned over and over and over again in my research that this is what was done, but I haven't found any actual source stating that this was the case. So with that being said, you can either believe this or take it with a grain of salt. But to understand the words of Shakespeare and what potion these witches were making, here are some translations, I guess you could say. So if you're calling out the eye of something, it is the blossom or seed. If it's the heart, it's talking about the bud or the seed. If something calls for a beak, bill, or nose, you're talking about the seed, bud, or bloom. The tongue or the teeth would be the petal or the leaf. I'm Shakespeare myself. No big deal. The head of something is the blossom. Again, tail would be stem. Hair of something would indicate dried herbs or the stringy parts of herbs. If something calls for the privates, genitals, or semen, it actually is talking about the seeds or mainly the sap. Again, if something calls for blood, would be the sap. If something calls for the guts, it's the roots or stalk. And then the paw, foot, leg, wing, or toe would be the leaf. Now,
so interesting. There's like this code.
I know, exactly. It's a code that supposedly was used. Again, I couldn't find actual sources for it, but this is supposedly what it would translate to. Now, we know the body parts, but then they would always add, you know, eye of newt, blah, blah, blah. So the toad supposedly means sage.
Okay.
Cat, catmint. Dog is some type of grass, specifically couch grass, but I think probably any grass. A frog was cinquefoil. Eagle was wild garlic. Blue jay, laurel. Hawk, hawkweed. Not much of a code there. lamb, wild lettuce. Nightingale, hops.
Oh.
Rat, valerian. Weasel, rue. And woodpecker, peony.
Oh, and that was interesting. Just like, very random group of herbs.
Yeah, so I guess like if you want to code name things you use, go for it. And kind of use that as a basis. But yeah. So now we want to grow our garden, right?
Yeah, so now I'm going to get into some good beginner plants. If you'd like to get into herbology and or herbalism. And the first, one of my faves, mint. Mm. And it's so easy to grow.
It's easy to overgrow too.
It goes all over the place. It'll take over your yard easily. Yeah, so practical uses for mint. Rich in nutrients. It helps the digestive system. It helps with indigestion. And gets rid of bad breath.
Yes.
Its magical uses, really great for protection, prosperity, luck, and healing.
And that's, of course, these lists aren't exhaustive either.
No. I'm just giving you like such a like beginner summation.
Yes. Because this is, I don't think we gave like a warning here, but like we also aren't doctors. So definitely, even though we're giving you lists of things, do further research. Make sure that any of these, if you're like interested, make sure it doesn't interfere with anything you're currently taking. That it's
also be very wary of taking advice from even a person who is a certified herbalist, because There is no, it's not very well regulated. Like, yes, people can take different courses and certifications. Some don't take much to get that certification. So
yeah,
find out where they were certified through and learn about what the rubrics were for that certification.
Honestly, finding a legit herbalist is not too dissimilar to finding like a good hairstylist or a good tattoo artist. Everyone goes through like the very, very basic trainings. But I mean, yes, there are certifications for hairstylists, so that is slightly different. But like a tattoo artist, you want to know, who did they study under? How did they grow as an artist? Because there's some people who are like, I was an apprentice for 6 months and now I'm setting up shop in my garage. Come Yikes. Pay me to tattoo. Like, no, you don't go to that person. They Good didn't do enough.
Tattoo artists, they apprentice for years.
And they really go through it. That's a whole other culture, basically, to get into. But that's, finding a good herbalist is not too dissimilar to that. You want to look at their body of work. You want to look at where they learned, how long they've been learning, etc.
Yeah. All right. Next good beginner plant would be calendula, as I say, or calendula, if that's how you like to pronounce it. Practical uses for calendula: it helps heal wounds, helps with fungal infections, hydrates skin. It's naturally antibacterial, can also be used to bring down a fever. Magical uses for calendula are self-love, happiness, prosperity. And I mean, honestly, just like, think of sunshine in a plant.
Yeah.
That's what calendula is.
If you need like a Leo in your life and you can't get one, just use calendula.
that's a good tip. Next is yarrow. Love yarrow. Mm-hmm. Practical uses is to treat inflammation and wound healing. Its leaves are antiseptic, styptic, and antimicrobial. Mm-hmm. It also has antispasmodic qualities for digestive issues. It stimulates menstruation, so just be warned.
Yep.
The flowers are diaphoretic and can induce sweating. Yep. Magical uses for yarrow are protection, seeking to attract current or new friends, and can assist in communication with both living and non-living peoples. Next is another one of my faves. I like to smell it. I like to have things that are flavored with it. Mm-hmm. Lavender. Practical uses: it can help with wound healing, can majorly help with anxiety, or simply just to relax. Can help with premenstrual emotional issues. Great as a toner for acne prone skin. And also, not that this like affects the body so much, but if you like to keep mosquitoes away, plant lavender. Mm-hmm. They don't like the aroma. So, I mean, there's a few different plants, but lavender is one of them. So, magical uses, great aid in meditation. Probably very much about like that relaxing, that relaxation. Mm-hmm. Any sort of like loving protection. It aids in psychic dreaming and just helps with like when you need to calm a situation down.
Yeah.
When you want to calm things down. Mm-hmm. Next is rosemary. Rosemary's practical uses. It enhances short-term memory. One of the well-known symbolisms for rosemary is not like magical purpose, but like more like symbolic meaning is remembrance. And that's actually why I have it tattooed on me. I have like a bouquet of three different herbs/flowers on me, and that meaning is remembrance, and it comes from the fact that like you got memory problems, have some rosemary tea.
Yes.
It also reduces it helps prevent gingivitis and any sort of like gum bleeding or plaque. It improves cognitive function in elderly folks. Again, that like memory stuff just really helps the brain. It also stimulates hair growth. So like rosemary oil, a little scalp massage up there.
Dude, and it's reduce... like super proven to work too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It can also reduce anxiety and depression. Now, similarly to its properties, like physical properties and symbolic meaning, in magic, it can be used for memory spells. It can also be used for healing, protection, and purification. Next is garlic. It's widely recognized for its ability to fight bacteria, viruses, fungi, and even parasites. So garlic is great. Garlic is delicious. And it's also very good for you. Magical uses for garlic is protection both from other people as well as like health protection. It can give spells a powerful boost. You can use it in banishment and in purification. Now, garden sage, its practical uses, I mean, it's really high in many nutrients and antioxidants. It can ease menopause symptoms. It helps reduce blood sugar levels, helps support memory and brain health, helps alleviate diarrhea, and it's a great toner for skin. Mm-hmm. It's magical purposes, wisdom, protection, good luck, prosperity. And we were just talking about this. Parsley. Parsley can help prevent bladder infections, kidney stone, gastrointestinal disorders, constipation, and it may promote blood sugar control and is high in vitamin K.
There we go.
my mom needs to get on this. She pops kidney stones out like she's a gumball machine for them.
Oh.
Poor thing.
She should look into Cleaver as well.
Ooh, okay.
Cleaver, our property grows in abundance.
Ah, nice. Here.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of magic, parsley can be used to help in communication with the dead, can be used for protection, fertility, and love magic. Basil is next. Basil can be used for stomach spasms, intestinal gas, fluid retention, head colds, and can help lower cholesterol. Its magical uses, it aids to help with the recovery of power and happiness, clarity of mind, and it can attract good fortune.
I love basil.
Oh, yes. Basil's a great herb. Oh, just like the smell of it, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. And lastly, just of this very, very concise list.
Yes.
Is fennel. Practical uses for fennel. It aids in digestion, helps get rid of gas and bloating, has laxative-like effects. Is also used for coughs and upper respiratory issues. For magic, you can use it for protection, but mainly it's great for courage.
Mm-hmm. And there's fennel's great because you've got so much of a plant to work with. You've got the bulb, you've got the stalks, and you've got the like leafy portions as well.
Yep.
I love fennel.
One of my favorite... there's a local pizza shop that they make this delicious pizza that, like, I like to tell myself has great medicinal properties and is a great excuse to eat this pizza. But it has fontina cheese, which, oh my gosh, that cheese is amazing. But also has fennel root and, like, a bunch of mushrooms. And get this, parsley. Topped with parsley. It's really yummy. Know. They make it gluten-free, and it's amazing because it's like a focaccia kind of crust.
Ooh.
Like the crust, gluten-free crust reminds me of focaccia. They make it in a pan, like it's a pan bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious. It's honestly the best thing I've ever tried in my life. I'll give you the name of the place, Laura, so you can hit it up, because any other gluten-free pizzas, just the bread itself, that crust that they use, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I want to try that. I love pizza. I think pizza is a food that I like because I think you can use so many of these types of plants in it or on it.
Yeah.
I love meals where you can use a lot like that.
It's just a really carby salad if you think about it.
Yes, carby salads are good salads.
Let me tell you, guys, carbs are not the enemy. Mm-mm. That is some toxic diet mythology. You need carbs in your diet. Very few people actually need to eat very low carb, like keto.
Yep.
Keto was like invented for people with brain seizures. That was the purpose of that diet. And then they like started noticing how they were these people were losing weight because they weren't eating carbs. Like the ketosis, whatever thingy. It's just like, yes, it happens. It's a function that happens mm-hmm. in the body when you eat very precise like macros that are needed in a keto diet. It's so hard to maintain. It's not sustainable. Like I'm very anti-keto.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but you see that big weight drop because you're not eating carbs. Carbs do make you hold on to water, but again, like you're just losing water weight. And that's why all these people think like, oh, keto is amazing.
Yeah.
It's.
Well, but the other thing is you do lose more than water weight if you're on it long enough.
Yeah, because you're eating in a calorie deficit because you're not having carbs.
Right. I mean, there are a number of things that happen. I mean, I'm not for the keto diet either, but there are other ways that people do end up losing a lot of weight. Your body's burning things differently.
Yeah.
It's not a sustainable way to do it, but the body is capable of doing it. Doesn't mean it's not going to cause long-term damage.
Mm-hmm.
You need carbs and you need to pair it with either a protein or a fat. That I know for sure.
Yeah.
Don't eat all the carbs you want. Just pair it with those things. Don't eat it alone.
Eat balanced plates, y'all.
Yeah. Like bread and oil. Anyways,
we're not dietitians. We're not a diet podcast. I just went off on a tangent because I felt passionately in the moment. All right, I'm done. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I'm done.
So some of these plants that you listed, I mean, these are great if you not just want to use them, but like they're easy to get access to. All of these,
yeah,
you can buy at the grocery store. You can grow yourself just in little, you know, planters, if that's something you do. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I mean, some of them might be a little bit harder to get your hands on, like the calendula and yarrow, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
I know some grocery stores will have bunches of plants like that, including things like nettle, dandelion, but it just kind of depends. But you can also just get it in like dried herb form and keep in your cupboard.
I will say, like, you can definitely go wildcrafting, be ethical about it, be responsible, and don't pick anything from roadsides.
No, like, not, like, a decent amount of way from roadsides. And just, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, be cognizant of the area itself.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that's a whole other topic we should probably discuss. I think we've discussed maybe doing that at some point.
Yeah, like a ethical episode, like herbal harvesting or something. I don't know. We'll work on it.
That's why we haven't done it yet. We were talking about how we would go about it. Sourcing of some sort.
We're still workshopping it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's other things that need ethical sourcing as well.
Yeah.
Now, back to our herbs. If you want to use herbs and you want to use them maybe more medicinally, I'm going to briefly go over some ways that you can do that. Which again, I'm going to tell you, but for sure, also look it up. So that way you have complete instructions. But one of the first and best ways to prepare a plant for use, specifically internal use, is to create a tincture.
Mm-hmm.
So tinctures, they're also known as hydroethanolic extractions because they are the alcoholic extraction of a plant. They're an easy-to-use, fast-acting form of herbal medicine that allows you to extract both the water-soluble and alcohol-soluble constituents from a plant for a strong, well-rounded mm-hmm. medicine.
Constituents.
Yes. So when you're in like a health food store and they have tinctures and then they have like the pill form, definitely go for the tincture form. Pill form is literally just dried herb. You're not going to get the same potency whatsoever from a tincture form. Tinctures are highly shelf stable. They can last 4 years. And I think a lot of people get nervous because it's made with alcohol. The amount of alcohol that you're going to get from a tincture is no more than the amount of alcohol that's in a banana. Literally. So if you are someone who doesn't drink, please don't be afraid of it. If you are completely against it, they do make them with other things as well, like glycerin. But
yeah,
to get the actual like full potency.
Or like vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same, but
no.
Just don't be afraid.
But it is an alternative.
Yeah. So tinctures can easily be made at home. There's two different methods. There's the folk method and there's the calculation method. I'm not going to go over the calculation method.
I like folk method too, personally, in my own.
That's all I've ever done.
Practice.
It's fine. It's fine. If you want to do the calculation method, by all means, look it up. The folk method, it's easy because it doesn't require scale. It's simple, straightforward. You only need your herbs, wide mouth canning jar with a tight fitting lid, alcohol, cheesecloth, and dropper bottles, like amber dropper bottles. Mm-hmm. Or if you like different colors, that's fine too. But like same idea.
You want it tinted.
Yeah. So to capture the widest range of both water soluble and alcohol soluble constituents, it's recommended to use an alcohol that's between 80 to 120 proof. And honestly, 100 proof is perfect. You can go either way, but sticking right in the middle, you'll be good. So you're going to get your jar. You're going to fill it halfway with the herbs of your choice. And then you're going to fill the jar to the top with your alcohol. And by the way, when I say alcohol, you can use a few different kinds. Vodka is going to be the most common. Second most common is brandy.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've topped it with the alcohol, put a piece of parchment paper over the mouth of the jar and then cap the jar with a metal lid. You're then going to allow the tincture to infuse for 4 to 6 weeks, shaking daily for at least the first week. When you're ready to strain, layer a few pieces of cheesecloth over the mouth of the jar and pour the tincture into either a second clean jar or a large bowl. And you want to get as much alcohol out of the herbs as you can by gathering up the cheesecloth and squeezing strongly until most of the liquid is out of the herb. You can either store your tincture in the clean glass jar with the tight-fitting lid. If you do this, put a new piece of parchment paper between the jar and lid for long-term storage. Or you can pour it into the amber dropper bottles. After that, you do want to make sure that you label the tincture with the name of the herb, the date you strained it, and the alcohol percentage that you used. And you can store it in a dark, cool place. And it will last you for quite a while. Now, similar to tinctures, you can do herb-infused oils. And this is not for ingestion. This is if you want to use something topically. I use this specifically for my own facial oil. I moisturize, wash my face with it, etc. You're basically going to do the same thing that you did for the tincture, but instead of alcohol, you're going to substitute with an oil. Definitely make sure you look up what kind of oil. If you're using it on your face, look up the comedogenic level of the oil and how get an idea of how prone you are to clogged pores, basically. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is hemp oil because it's a zero level comedogenic oil. And this is also a great replacement for just using straight essential oils, trying to find carrier oil because you should not be putting essential oils directly onto your skin. This allows you to get the whole use of the plant in an oil that you can then apply to your skin. So it's a great option.
I love oil cleansing. Like that changed my life for my skin. I had oily skin forever. I remember Marie, my bestie, she started working for this company that basically used like plant-based skincare. And that's when I learned the whole thing of like, oh, well, you know, the drugstore facial cleansers are like stripping that whole sebum layer. And like, that's why I was so damn oily. It was because my face was like overcompensating for all the oils that were stripped from my face. And then I found, I personally use Kindred skincare. But man, my face is so balanced now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So balanced.
All I did was make the switch to, I do still, I've gone back and forth as far as cleansing my skin. I do still cleanse with oil, especially if I've worn makeup, but mm-hmm. I do also use, as I'm getting close to my mid 30s, I forget what it is. It's a brand that I really like. Super recommended. CeraVe. I don't know. It's a cleanser from them. Mm-hmm. I also use the retinol serum. But
nice.
I still follow it up with my oil moisturizer. So if you're someone who even likes to do a combination, just follow it up with the oil. And I promise your oily skin issues, you just, whatever you do to it, make sure you're putting that oil back on there and it'll be fine. It'll be happy.
Don't be afraid of oil. Like, that's mm-mm. the thing. Like, the oil-free moisturizers that they make, like, yes, it works for some people. Sure. Mm-hmm. But you have to just, like, be so aware of the actual, like, kind of hydration that your face needs.
Right. Because there's different types of oily skin. So, like, mm-hmm. I had oily skin as well, but it wasn't because I truly had oily skin. It was because it was imbalanced. Mm-hmm. By what I was putting on it. There are people who skin just overproduces oil. So
yeah.
For that, definitely ask a dermatologist if you have one. Try it. See if you like it. It may not work using oil instead. But for a lot of people who have oily skin, that's not the case. And that was also something I picked up by working with the skincare peeps with Sephora and all the different brands.
Nice.
Now, moving on to a different form of using your herbs. Everyone can make a good tea, but there's going to be some herbs that you want to use that are best done as an infusion. So a good way to tell if you need a tea or an infusion is if the plant is aromatic or not. If the plant is aromatic, that would indicate it has a higher level of essential oil or volatile oil in the plant, and you don't want to steep that for very long. So that makes a great tea. But if you're using a plant that isn't aromatic, it's going to be lower in those oils. And to get the mm-hmm. best amount of the medicinal goodness from it, you're going to want it to infuse a bit longer than you would for a tea. So infusions are ideal for enjoying the benefits of herbs without essential oils or volatile oils. And it's necessary to do an infusion versus tea to get the full benefit, as I just said. So you're going to fill a quart jar with cold water. You're going to bundle 1 ounce of whatever herb in cheesecloth or a muslin bag and mm-hmm. slightly moisten the herb inside the bundle. It just makes it easier to like submerge it. And then you are going to submerge it just below the water in the jar. Drape the tied end over the bundle. Of the bundle over the lip of the jar, secure it loosely, and then allow it to infuse overnight. And this is great for, like, I think I mentioned it earlier, but nettle. Nettle is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to, like, I know stores sell, like, nettle tea. You're not going to get the same benefits from that tea as you would from letting it infuse overnight. And there are other ways of doing like, a long infusion. This is just an easy way. To do a cold infusion. Another fun way that I know everyone's going to want to know is how to make a smoke stick.
Oh, yes.
So you're going to start with fresh herbs or plant, whatever you're using. Make sure you're not pulling like leaves off because you want it to be like roughly the length of whatever you're going to be burning. So cut the stem to the length that you want. Tie everything together on one end, and then you're going to take 2 pieces of string or whatever you're using to wrap this with that is burnable without compromising your lungs. And you're going to begin to wrap it going in opposite directions. And you're going to weave up and down to fully secure it in a crisscross pattern. And you want to keep it nice and tight as you're wrapping it. And that may mean like stopping from time to time to pull it a little bit tighter. And then you're going to place your finished stick and a warm place to dry out, because you can't burn it fresh. It's not going to quite work the same. So ideally, you're going to want to hang it in a place like you can put it in a cupboard or over like a wood stove if you are so lucky to have one. And that's it. That's all you do for that. And then finally, this is a super fun thing to do. If you want to use a hydrosol, so if you want to make your own like rose water, great for the skin. Maybe you're acne prone. You want to use lavender. Like we mentioned, using some plants as toners. This is how you would create your toner, or an easy way to create your toner. So doing it from scratch, it can get a little complicated. Because to truly do it, you need like a still. I am lucky enough to have two.
Nice.
It's so much fun. The science of it is so cool. So like, I'll explain. So the way that it should be done, I'll explain so that way this maybe will make more sense. So you have like a big pot. You put your plant in there with water and you heat it up from the bottom. So as it heats up, it's breaking down that plant to like open up all like the cells, the molecules, to get all the good stuff out into that water. And then as it's heating, that water then turns to steam and rises. And then there is like a spout that comes, that collects that and then comes back and down into like a coil off to the side. And from there, there's an area where cold water comes in and then comes out, basically to cool it. So you've heated it up into steam, where you've got the herbal steam coming through, and then it gets cooled back down into a water, and then you collect it. And the area where you collect it, you want to be sure to use like a stopper, because what's going to come out is all the water-soluble parts of that plant, but at the very, very top is where you'll get the essential oil. So you kind of want to use the stopper to make sure that you can separate that. Now, if you have a still, you get to separate it. If you're doing it from scratch at home, there isn't really going to be a way to separate it. So don't ingest these hydrosols, basically, if you're making it from scratch.
Yeah, they're just topical.
Exactly. So to do it with just anything you may have at home, you're going to use either a rack or ramekin in the bottom of a large pot. So get your pot, put something on there, and then you're going to put a small bowl or container on top of that rack or ramekin. Then fill the bottom of the large pot with the plant material. And then you want the plants to reach like just up to the smaller bowl. Then fill the water until the plant material is just like barely submerged. And then put the lid of the large pot upside down on top. So it usually will be like concave.
Right.
And then you're going to fill that with ice. So that way we kind of have that idea of the heat from the bottom rising up and then the ice at the top cooling it. And the idea of that bowl on the inside is to capture the condensation coming back down. So that bowl is the water that you'll end up using as your hydrosol. So set it up to do that. Heat it up just enough for the water surrounding the whatever it is to steam, but not boil, and let it do this for about 20 minutes. If you have a lid that's see-through, awesome, because then you can kind of watch it. But if not, give it like a good 20 minutes and then check on it. And then you can store it in a dark, like amber bottle in the fridge, but this is a water, so don't store it indefinitely. You can also just put it in your spray bottle if you have like a little one. Keep it in a place where it's not going to get too heated up and use it as your toner.
Nice.
And that's just some of the ways that you can use your herbs at home in non-magical ways, but medicinal ways. And you can incorporate your magic into it, especially if it's something topical. Use it in a beauty routine, anoint. Whatever your materials are that you're using with maybe herb-infused oil. All kind of funsies ways.
Love herbs. Love herbalism. If you are a person like me that you need more structure or something to help you learn. Like if you're interested in learning, and also if you have, you know, the cash to pay for a course, like there's an endless amount of resources free online mm-hmm. for you to sleuth your way and learn, you know, about herbalism. But if you're a person who you're like, I want to pay for like an online class or something like that, I highly recommend the Herbal Academy. I don't have a certification, I will say that much. However, I do have a certificate that I've completed the beginner course and I have intermediate and advanced pending. Like I already purchased the classes. I just have to like start them, but really great resource. They also have some stuff in their like shop that you can get that isn't like herbs themselves, but like you can buy the tools and stuff. So mm-hmm. definitely check that out. Goodness, what is it called? I mean, it's Herbal Academy, but I'm trying to think of what the URL is. I will include it in our show notes. Oh, it's just theherbalacademy.com. I was like, is it .org, .edu? I don't know. Yeah, it's just herbalacademy.com.
Perfect.
Yeah. And it's cool because when you sign up as a student, they actually give you discount codes to buy herbs, like high quality herbs with. So
is it herbs through them or through a supplier?
No, because they don't sell herbs. Mm-hmm. They have partnerships with different companies like Rose Mountain Herbs, some smaller ones. And they offer their students a discount.
Nice.
And it can range anywhere from 10% to 20%. Mm-hmm. So also really great resource. They also have like the Herbarium, which I believe is a subscription based like blog. So mm-hmm. if you want to, I don't know, if you're interested in that, that's there. They have different workshop. They have more courses than just like herbalism in general. Mm-hmm. They also have courses that like specialize in like skincare. Or like aromatherapy. So you can like do stuff that's a little more specialized, mm-hmm. if you will. They offer, I'm like on their website right now, they offer 20 herbal programs to help you meet your educational goals.
Not sponsored, by the way.
Not sponsored, no. Just a fan. Just a fan. They also have like botanical drawing for herbalists. So wait. That's like a class in of itself is just like.
Oh, to draw. Like a drawing, I was like.
Botanical drawings. Yeah.
Like, is this a coloring book that you can like download and print?
No. Yeah, they have like natural perfumery, botanical skincare, foraging, botany and wildcrafting. The craft of herbal fermentation, herbal materia medica course, like there's so many, a mm-hmm. mushroom course, herbal self-care for stress management. Like they have so many awesome ones. So check it out. Theherbalacademy.com.
Yeah. And I think even too, for people who just want to learn about plants and maybe don't know if they're ready to take like an actual class is mm-hmm. you can also look on like Facebook for local plant groups.
Yeah.
It could be labeled either as a plant group or a gardening group, foraging group, just anywhere that is regional that can go over. These are the plants specifically in our area. This is where we forage for them. And sometimes you can just pick up knowledge that way if you're unsure, if you're not ready to take that next step. Because it is also important, like, I know everyone wants to use like the herbs you're supposed to use for whatever spell or tincture or whatever, but there's a lot available just around you mm-hmm. that you don't have to go very far for. But also if you don't know where to look, that can be hard if you don't have a source.
Yeah, I love Facebook groups. I'm part of so many.
Yeah, same.
Part of so many. So yeah, that's also another really great tip. Mm-hmm. Well, we hope you all enjoyed this episode on herbology and herbalism. Again, this is not exhaustive information whatsoever, and neither of us are certified herbalists or doctors or anything like that. We are two hobbyist herbalists, mm-hmm. I guess you would say. So definitely take what we say with a grain of salt. But I mean, we listed kind of very general things.
Yeah.
And in your herbal preparations, definitely look up those processes to make sure that you are making everything correctly and safely.
Mm-hmm.
And we wish you happy studying. So thanks for listening to our show. Catch us next week for spooky. And I will be covering true crime. Laura will have paranormal. So tune in for that. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we are at The New Witches pretty much everywhere. Please rate and review us on whatever listening platform you're listening to us on. We'd really appreciate that. If you'd like to submit for a future listener stories episode, we had one recently. So if you'd like to participate in that and tell us your story, or if you have a question for us, we also do those on that episode. We do that every 13th of the month. A few different ways to submit your story or question: go to our website, thenewwitches.com, and go to our contact page for our submission form there. You can also email it in directly to us at thenewwitches@gmail.com. Lastly, you can phone it in, call us, leave a voicemail. We have a Google voicemail box. It goes straight to voicemail. You don't have to talk to anybody. You have up to 3 minutes to leave your story or question in our voicemail box. And the phone number for that is 707-559-8111. And finally, another amazing and really generous way to support the show is becoming a Patreon member. Go to patreon.com/thenewwitches. And for as little as $5 a month, you get exclusive benefits as a patron, like bonus monthly episodes and private readings with Laura. Some of the tiers include private readings with Laura. Lots of really awesome goodies. You're added to, speaking of Facebook groups, you're added to our private Facebook group for our patrons only. Very, very exclusive. And you're added to our close friends list on Instagram. So definitely check that out. We appreciate each and every one of you. We hope you have fun discovering all the different herbs and tinkering. That's always the funnest part. I wish I could go back to when I was like first just discovering herbalism. So yeah, stay witchy.
Keep it creepy.
Bye.